Welcome back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. We bring on the one, the only Wonder Goblin. Comes on, talks about his beginnings in art. We jump around his history and his timeline back and forth until we get to the fact that he is opening a factory at some point to do more pulled vinyl in the U.S. If you want to support Toys on Tap, you can jump on all socials at Toys on Tap. If you want to support even more, it's free for you, but it means the world to us. You can like, subscribe, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. And if you want to support even more, you can jump on the Patreon, patreon.com/toysontap. It is where you get extra content and where you can support in a little extra way on Toys on Tap. Now let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. I gotta tell you, I am the most excited that you're on. I've watched your work and all the stuff that happens and see your trips. And now the new show that you have with like full puppetry is wild.
Thanks.
it's really cool to see. Also, I didn't know your name was James Sizemore. One of my best friends, his last name is Sizemore, and he has a brother named James Sizemore. So I was like, oh, I sent this to the wrong person. Uh-oh. I was a little panicked at the beginning.
That's hilarious.
I don't know if you've heard an episode. It usually goes where we do like backstory and how we get to this point and all the projects you're working on and everything. And we really just have a laid back conversation about you.
Ooh, that sounds great.
Yeah, I'm pumped. We're going to start it off the same way that we do every episode. Please introduce yourself. Tell us who you are and what you do.
All right. Well, thanks for having me. My name is James Sizemore. My toy moniker is Wonder Goblin. And I make toys and videos and I oil paint and I dabble in a little poetry in my downtime and just living the dream. That's what I do.
Nonstop. Just so many creative avenues. I do want to talk about something before we jump into your story. You took a photo that is the dream photo. You went to this, I'm assuming some factory in Japan, and it was a pile of molds.
No, actually that was not me.
Oh,
that was not me. No.
Did you post
that
photo?
You might be thinking of a post that I shared.
Maybe it was one that you shared.
Yeah. Wasn't me. Yeah, I've actually never stepped foot in any of my factories.
Oh my gosh! If you shared
it's unfortunate.
That,
when I went to Japan last year, I was planning on going to one of my factories, and I was planning on also getting a tour of Shirahama's factory. Mm-hmm. And both days got canceled on me because it was all right around Superfest and everybody was slammed. And I just got canceled on. So it was really sad. I didn't get to see any of the factories, but I did get to meet Goto-san. I think that was probably my highlight of going to Tokyo, was getting to hang out with him.
I've been trying my darndest to get in touch with him. He's so old. And I want to
You can't get in touch with him. He doesn't, you gotta talk to somebody else to go in and talk to him. Cause he's not on like any kind of, social media or anything like that. And he doesn't speak any English. No.
Yeah. And so like finding the translator, all that would be fine. But like there's no way I could get him on an interview, which is like, it'd be such a funny one to have on, but.
Yeah. You'd have to speak fluent Japanese, but and even then it'd be tough. You need to find somebody who speaks. He's old school.
Yeah.
And even like when I went with Don Kratzer and he was translating for me, even Don had a tough time sometimes because Goto just kind of he's so old. I think he uses a different he speaks in a different kind of way and really fast. Yeah. And sometimes it's hard to follow him, but he's a real character. And he's crazy. He's a legend. He just has been huffing those paint fumes for like 60 plus years or something, you know, since he was a kid.
Yeah. Everyone's fun when they get enough paint huffing in them.
Yeah.
Okay. Walk me back. Walk me back to the beginning. I need to hear childhood. Every toy artist or everyone that is an artist definitely had toys growing up. Walk me back to those toys you had growing up, the things that were around, the cartoons, all that stuff. What were you into?
Well, oh man, I was into so much. I was just, let's see, you know where to start. I think my passion was dinosaurs.
Yeah.
I loved dinosaurs growing up. And anything dinosaurs, any kind of toys, or and Godzilla, you know, love Godzilla. And it's just, let's see, there wasn't really like a focus. I wasn't one of those kids who had like, you know, one thing and a whole lot of it. I just had a bunch of little stuff. I had a bunch of things, like, you know, Imperial toys were my favorite, I think.
Yeah.
Really loved the Imperial dinosaurs and Godzilla, you know, and those weird monsters, you know, the two-headed creatures and stuff, the knights, daggers, dragons stuff. And I really loved Play School, definitely dinosaurs, the ones with the dinosaurs that had the little cavemen that would ride in saddles on the back.
Yeah, because for some reason
I still have all of them. I'm looking at them right now. They're over there.
Yeah.
And let's see, what else did I love as a kid? He-Man, loved He-Man. He-Man was my jam.
Did you have any of those Chinasaur figures, definitely from a Chinese factory, that just like barely looked like a dinosaur?
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah. Tons of them. Oh yeah, love the little cheap, the cheap knockoff stuff was, yeah, the stuff my parents really liked to get me. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, had some knockoff Japanese soft vinyl stuff that they had found for me. And yeah, all kinds of, I'm looking over my little wind up toys. I loved wind up toys. Like I had a little wind up Godzilla, you know, that would spark and stuff. And I don't know. It colorful. Loved it. I loved robots, you know, grew up, you know, had robot toys and stuff, and just, you know, it was fun. It was a fun childhood.
I mean,
but, you know, it's funny because toys that I grew up with, like, they've definitely influenced me and stuff and inspired me and everything. But, I don't know. I feel like my biggest inspirations, the things that really got me into making toys weren't really toys themselves. It was just I had reached a time in my life as an artist that I...
What up, toy nerds? This is Ray.
And Dave. Go check out our brand new YouTube channel, The Toy Rats.
We make toys.
We talk about toys.
We talk about old toys.
And new toys.
And toys that we make.
And we're just a bunch of goofballs. It's a good time.
We make fun of Dave a lot.
I'm all right with that. So, if you get a chance, go check out Toy Rats on YouTube. You won't be disappointed. You might be.
Yeah, you could. Who knows?
You got to check it out.
Toy Rats. Toy Rats. YouTube.
Bye.
To make a decision on how to get my artwork out to lots of people at an affordable cost, mm-hmm. you know? And prior to that, I was working in special effects and making, big monsters for low-budget horror movies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, everything was just crazy. The timelines were crazy. There's no, you know, we didn't get paid. It was just overworked, you know, crazy 16-hour days, sometimes working multiple days on end with no sleep to ensure that the effect gets made in time for the shot. And, so I wanted to keep making monsters, but I had to think of a way to do it in a way that wasn't going to kill me, you know? And so I was like, man, and also the movie industry is just kind of gross. And I just didn't really want to be a part of it anymore. But, yeah. I just one day looked over at my toy shelf and saw my old dinosaur toys and stuff and my Godzilla toys and everything. And I was just like, hey, why don't I just take my monsters? Because I've been sketching out creatures and monsters ever since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I come up with like, you know, superhero names and wrote little comics when I was a kid. And my parents were potters. So as a kid in this studio here, this used to be a pottery studio in the 80s, growing up in the 80s and 90s, I would sit in here all day and sculpt, you know, monsters out of clay. And then my parents would fire them in the kiln outside and I'd have my little creatures. So my love for making toys has more so come from just like a need to get my creatures out there and bring them to life, you know, in a way that made sense. That wasn't like, okay, I got to make a movie every time I want to like introduce a new creature, or I want to like, you know, make a bunch of oil paintings and then have to get involved with like an art gallery and then navigate that whole scene, which is just like, oof.
You know, yeah.
That's crazy. So I was just like, I saw that people were making their own toys. People were able to do this, you know, and I got super stoked and interested. I was like, yeah, I can do that. I love toys. I love monsters. Let's make them. And so I just kind of taught myself how to do it in resin first, and then just going to conventions and stuff, met people and made the right connections with people and got introduced to some factories, and then finally got to make them in soft vinyl, and then I got hooked from then on, and I'm just it's just like a magical way to make, in my opinion, it's like interactive art. You mm-hmm. know, it's more than just like the toys that we grew up with, or the toys that, you know, like trying to mimic like a thing that brings us nostalgia. For me, it's like trying to get a creature that's like nagging me in my brain. It wants to come out. And so I'm like, okay, I'll make it into a toy, because then I can make hundreds of you and lots of people can enjoy them and play with them and move them around and take pictures of them. And then those pictures can be art. And it's just never ending. You know, the possibilities are endless. You know, it's just the best medium to bring your art alive, in my opinion. And I think more people should do it.
Absolutely. I think, tell me about this art and where this kind of started in your life to have such a deep rooted understanding of art for you, and to have this like desire to create start somewhere. And you talked about this pottery studio. So who kind of spoke this into you, and what does that look like growing up?
Well, I mean, my parents being potters since the 70s, my parents were master potters. You know, mm-hmm. they've been making pottery since the 70s. And they, being artists themselves, you know, I had that fortunate place of upbringing where, you know, every artistic whim I had was totally supported and fostered. And so, you know, it's such a beautiful thing when you've got parents that understand that and encourage, not only do they support it, but they encourage it. You know, like they, like my mom enrolled me in, you know, rec center art classes when I was just a kid. And, you know, I remember they put colored pencils in front of me, as early as I could start playing with them, you know?
Yeah.
And so I owe it all to them, you know, they really fostered it in me. And then I just, you know, I wanted to make the things that I liked. So I saw a Godzilla movie and I wanted to make a Godzilla. So I get in the studio and I'd sculpt a janky little, you know, ceramic bootleg Godzilla looking thing. And my mom would sit over with me and show me how to, you know, do the coil, you know, method with the clay so that we can make it big and stuff it with newspaper so that it hold its shape, you know.
Heck yeah.
Put it in the kiln and fire it, and then we'd get it out and we'd glaze it. You know, I'd glaze it like a nice teal green color or something, and she'd show me how to do that. And dad would you know, dad tried to teach me how to throw pots and stuff, but I never really enjoyed the pottery aspect. I always just wanted to sculpt. I wanted to make monsters.
Yeah.
I didn't want to make pots.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, you know, and then from there, I just, I don't know. You know, they just any kind of art supplies they'd bring home from school, you know, because they were art teachers too. So yeah. they taught art, and mom would bring home art supplies and give them to me, and I'd, you know, paint something with them. And it was just, that's how it all happened.
That's the most unreal origin story, because to have, I mean, anyone that knows your name knows what you've got going on. We've seen the toys, we've seen the painting and all that stuff. And so to see that it started because you have parents that not only were artists, but art teachers, so they could just like funnel materials and stuff to you. That's wild.
Oh yeah. It's such a, it's a rare thing. And I there's not a day goes by that I don't think about how fortunate I've been in my life to have parents like I have. They're incredible. I mean, right now, you know, me and my dad are out building a vinyl factory. That's what we've been doing for the past few months, is we've been, you know, my dad, he not only is my dad a potter, he taught construction in the 80s in high school. So he knows how to build. He built everything, you know, on our farm. We've got like a few houses. We've got like two studios, and we built it all, you know, ourselves. And he's taught me how to construct and build stuff. I mean, it's crazy how fortunate I am. And he's so fun to work with too. We're out there thinking of ways on how we can, you know, make it solar powered, you know, right now he's like a genius. He's learning how to become totally self-sustainable, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, he's been schooling himself on solar energy for a while. And, we're probably going to end up making the vinyl factory solar powered.
That's awesome.
We were looking at our circuit breakers, and we're already, because, you know, we've got so many different buildings on this farm, we're kind of using the max electricity mm-hmm. from the grid, you know. We're kind of tapped in. Our circuit breakers are filled up.
Yeah.
So we're trying to come up with a creative way to get this factory to be powered, you know. We're like, well, I don't know if the chemical bath is going to use this much electricity, so we're going to have to lose one thing on the circuit breaker. So we're just like, you know what, let's just hook up solar panels and try to make it all solar powered. So that's going to be our next thing. So it's always some fun new thing we're trying to figure out and build out here.
Yeah. What was, I mean, with sculpting monsters and doing all that stuff, because we couldn't get you to sculpt pots, like, as you're doing that, at what point do you realize, like, I can make toys? I can make, like, this is crazy. I can actually do this and make something else.
You know, I think it first dawned on me when I lived in Tucson for a few years. I moved out to Tucson and was trying to make it as an oil painter. Mm-hmm. And I was showing in galleries and kind of navigating that whole scene, and that I had a difficult time with that. But during that time, I was invited to an art show, and it was a Lulubell mm-hmm. show, and I had never heard of, you know, designer toys I've never seen all the things that people could do with toys up to that point, you know. To me, toys up to that point in my life were just, you know, the kind of toys I grew up with and stuff. So when I walked in there and I saw all these like clear with guts things and glow in the dark things with black lights and all kinds of weird, you know, colorful sprays and metallic things that popped and just all these creative, weird creatures and stuff. And just, I was just like blown away. I was just like, wow, what is this? What is all this, you know? And it was just a passing thing. I just went in there. I saw it all. I kind of, you know, absorbed it. And then I forgot about it. I just went right back to, you know, paint my oil paintings and trying to sell them in galleries and, you know, navigating that whole thing. And then I just forgot about it for years. And then I started making movies, and I got into making some low budget movies, made a couple of feature films and stuff, and got really deep into that. And it was like I said, it was towards the end of my short but wild filmmaking career that I decided, man, I can't do this anymore. I'm burning the candle at both ends, I'm not making any money. I got to think of a way to express myself in a more mentally sound way. That's not going to require so much of me, you know, physically and mentally. And so I remembered, oh, that's right. That was a thing I saw. I could take these, because I was like, how can I make these monsters small and then sell them? You know, oh, I can do toys. That's right. Mm-hmm. They do that. And I just got really into researching it and going, like I said, going to the conventions, learning about the different process. Cause you know, when I first started, I was just doing DIY resin stuff, you know?
Yeah. What year is this?
This was, in 2015.
Okay.
10 years ago. And, I started making resin stuff, made my little resin goblin. I was making coloring books and, prints, art prints and stuff like that. And was taking that stuff to conventions. And I remember my first year at Designer Con, it wasn't Designer Con. It was Skinner came here to Atlanta to film a music video with my friends, my team that I used to make films with. Mm-hmm. They were filming. And they told me about it. They're like, oh dude, Skinner's down here. You love this guy. We got to talking and he saw my movie, my movie, The Demon's Rook, and he liked it. And I had heard of his artwork before, you know. I actually had like a poster of his up in my room, like back when I lived in Tucson, I think. Yeah. it was cool getting to know him and talk to him, and we just decided, let's collaborate on a toy. And so we made the resin fungoid man. Mm-hmm. And then I took that to Designer Con, and then that kind of got me noticed, because people were like, oh, Skinner, a Skinner toy. And so then people were like, oh, who's this Wonder Goblin guy? And then from there, that's when I started making connections to Soft Vinyl Factories, and Skinner introduced me to Ezra, who a Violence toy, who got me into a factory in China. And then from there, you know, I met Corey at Mariyama in Japan, and mm-hmm. and got in there to make toys in Japan. And so it just kind of all snowballed after meeting Skinner.
Yeah. That seems how the toy scene has inevitably worked. I mean, yeah. I've only been doing this podcast for 4 years and doing all the stuff and now helping others produce toys and going through that process. And it like, mm-hmm. it all builds on itself at an alarming rate. Like it just gets out of control almost and starts spreading.
Yeah. It, you know, it's, there's a nice, you know, it's a small scene, but mm-hmm. everybody knows everybody, right?
Yeah.
So when you make a splash with just a few people, it, you know, the rest of the town, you know, hears about it, and then you're a toy maker. And yeah. And that's the way it was, you know, when I first started. And now it's gotten a lot bigger and there's a lot more people. And I think it's maybe a little harder to get noticed if you're just starting out now as a toy maker. Mm-hmm. From what I've heard, you know, it can be a little more difficult because the market's a little more oversaturated, and you know, we're also just living in crazy times. So
yeah.
So people aren't maybe quite as gung-ho about toys as they were when in simpler times, you know,
yeah.
preoccupied with whether they're going to be able to afford groceries or not, you know?
Yeah.
But
so you make the fungoid and you take it to Designer Con. Those are early years of Designer Con as well. And so are you making the jump? It seems like this is a natural progression. We make the jump from resin to soft vinyl of some sorts. Making that jump, tell me about that. Tell me about the nerves that kind of went into that. Because you're starting over. Once you learn how to do resin, you get good at it, and then you got to start all over with soft vinyl.
Man, I could not wait to get into soft vinyl. I was so burnt out on all. I occasionally will cast up some resin stuff, you know, like little accessories or some small little keshi or some little things, you know. But I really don't enjoy the sanding and the one at a time, the pressure, just everything. Just, I don't know, resin. It always kind of aggravated me. I got really into the process at first, and then I got burnt out on it super fast.
Yeah.
And there's just something about being able to focus on the things you really enjoy, which for me were designing, sculpting, and painting.
Mm-hmm.
And so with soft vinyl, once I realized that, like, that's the name of the game with soft vinyl, you know, you're designing it, you sculpt it, you send it off, somebody else is going to mold it and pull it and then, you know, send it back to you so that you can paint it, assemble it and paint it. And I loved that. I loved that concept. So from the beginning, there was no nerves. It was just excitement. I was just ready. I was ready.
Yeah.
So I mean, I will say though, it's funny because I sit there and dog on the process. And I'm getting myself set up here with I'm gonna be pulling my own vinyl soon. So
yeah, which is incredible.
It is, but I'm probably gonna have the same feelings. I'm probably, after doing it for about a year, I'm gonna get burnt out and I'm not gonna wanna ever do it again. But that, my plan is to, you know, I'm gonna hire my friends to come out and I'm gonna teach them and train them how to do it once I figure it out, and then give them jobs so that I can once again return to doing what I love and have somebody else take care of doing the meaty, you know, labor of pulling the toys.
Yeah. I mean, going through all of this art that you did until you got to toys, how was each piece kind of informing you in when you're doing toys? So like the oil painting, how is that process kind of helping you out? The resin casting, how's that kind of working with you? The clay, are you still working with clay or are you a digital sculptor? Like all those questions, how are those all informing how you do art toys now?
Yeah, I am. Well, you know, I've got a whole universe in my head that I've built.
Let's let it out.
and so it's all just coming out in whatever way I'm feeling. I like to go with the flow. So one day if I come out and I got an idea for a whole, you know, race of beings, you know, the goblin men, right? And I'm like, oh, and there's this, and I start writing a story, and I've got like a story that I've written up that no one else has heard or read, but I'm sitting there writing it almost like a script, you know, like a movie script.
Mm-hmm.
And it's helping me sort of get a feel for like what kind of things they wear and like what they do and what they eat and where they live and how they act and how they differ from each other, what kind of personality traits that they have. And then I just kind of build on that. And then I start drawing them and maybe I'll paint them to get to know them better. And then I'll just pull up I'll get some clay. You know, and I sculpt it all by hand. I don't digitally sculpt or anything. I like getting my hands dirty and just sculpting the figure. It all just sort of, I just kind of bounce. I've got the kind of brain that I can't just do the same thing all the time, or I get tired. And so, yeah. So to keep myself kind of bouncy, I have multiple things going at once, and I kind of listen to my body too. And I kind of feel out, you know, if my wrist is kind of overdone, kind of hurting, maybe I won't sculpt today. You know,
yeah.
Maybe I'll work on oil painting, because that doesn't really hurt my wrist so much because I'm using my whole arm. Or, you know, maybe I'll get out there and airbrush a little bit with my trigger gun, you know, or maybe I'll, you know, change it up and do some writing today. You know, it's all just kind of I just kind of feel it out and see what needs to be done. And in the rare occasion that I make a deadline for myself and have to, then I stay focused on something and get like a toy release painted up or something like that, or a video made or something. But it all just kind of feeds into each other, and I don't really know what I'm doing it when I do it. I'm just kind of going off intuition, you know?
Yeah. I do have to ask, of course, in this grand scheme of things, as you're painting and making toys and all this stuff, there's a paint company that is birthed. Yeah. Is this out of just necessity? Is it out of, I just don't like what's around? Is this, tell me all the ins, because that is like, I've tried to explain that type of thing to someone where it's like, that's art adjacent. Like, yeah. it's the building of the supply that will make the art, which is awesome. Yeah. So tell me about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think you nailed it. You know, I was not just me, everybody in America, I think, you know, that I spoke with personally, was very frustrated with how difficult it was to paint toys and how expensive it was to get the paints to, you know, or you know, how DIY you had to get it, you know, like, you know, find like fishing lure paint and thin it down with some vinyl thinner and add extra pigment so that it would not just be these translucent glazes, you know, I got burnt out, you know, once again,
yeah,
sourcing the paint, you know, unless you know somebody that can go to Japan for you and smuggle it back on a plane, you know, which is very illegal because it's flammable stuff, you know.
Yeah.
You know, then you're kind of at the whims with of like what we had here, which was not very much the time. I think at the time when I first started making paint and started researching it, most everybody was using like Monster Color.
Okay.
You know, and I think Mad Ape Ninja had just started, but I don't think they had a lot of colors, and anyways, not to get lost in the weeds, I basically just decided, look, there aren't enough options. Mm-hmm. There needs to be a brand that makes vinyl paint specifically formulated for toys, because Monster Color wasn't that. They said they were, but it was urethane. It was white labeled urethane paint. It was automotive paint, you know? And so we needed like a homegrown, made in America vinyl paint. And it was frustrating that there weren't, you know, options that were like ready spray, airbrush paint. You know, you can get them for all these other hobbies, you know, paint that you don't have to mix up yourself. It's just airbrush. It's ready to go. You know, why can't we do it? Why can't it be done? So yeah, I got that bug in me, and I was just like, I'm going to do this. And I spent about a year researching it, trying to figure it out myself, and just coming up with dead end, not able to source the right chemicals, having a hard time getting like chemical suppliers to give me what I needed. And so I was connected with a chemist in Atlanta.
That statement alone is so crazy to me. Connected with a chemist.
It was very what's the word? Serendipitous. It was very serendipitous how it happened.
Yeah.
Because I was talking with Brentag, one of our local, you know, solvent suppliers. And I was like, man, I'm just having such a hard time with this final formulation. And I just wish I just, cause I had kind of gotten made friends with the guy. Cause he had provided me a lot of samples and I'd bought a lot of pigments from him and stuff and some solvents too. He had lots of connections. And so he was like, man, you know what? I'm going to connect you with the technical director over at Permite Paint, because there's a chemist there who's very friendly and he probably knows what you need. And so I got to talking with this guy named Chuck mm-hmm. Matisse, and he was one of the guys that came up with the vinyl paint formulation in the 70s for canned foods.
Okay.
Yeah. So canned foods used to be covered in a vinyl lacquer type of thing. That's how they got to stick to the cans in the 70s. And so he worked on that.
Yeah.
So he kind of had like an understanding of vinyl formulations already. And so he was intrigued. And we met up a lot and we became friends. And, you know, for another year or two or so, we worked on that formulation. And he finally cracked the code. And it was a lot of R&D. And, but, you know, he gave me a pretty good deal. But it did cost a pretty penny, and it was pretty much all my savings to get it done. But you know, we got it, and the rest is history. Now we've finally got a vinyl paint here in the States, and coming out with new colors every year,
which is crazy. And I think this might help. Can you explain to everyone that listens, what is the difference between a vinyl toy specific paint and then any of the other amount of things that we use? Like, what makes this paint necessary?
Yeah. Well, okay. So, you know, there's a lot of people who paint on vinyl toys and don't use vinyl paint.
And yeah, I own a couple.
What they do is they'll prime it mm-hmm. with something, you know, so that they can get the paint to not stick. Because basically what you've got is you've got a vinyl toys are made of plastisol mm-hmm. and it's a PVC plastic, right? Polyvinyl chloride. And the only thing that chemically bonds to polyvinyl chloride is vinyl, right? And not just any vinyl. It has to be a solvent emulsion. It has to be a solvent based vinyl so that, well, at the moment it has to be. Mm-hmm. Me and my chemist are working on a non-toxic one that will be water-based.
Great.
But it's been taking us years because no one else has done it, and there's a reason. It's hard. So but up to this point, you need a solvent-based vinyl, because what happens is when you take vinyl paint, or let's start with this. When you take acrylic paint mm-hmm. and you paint it on top of a vinyl toy, that acrylic paint is sitting on the surface of the vinyl toy.
Yeah.
The minute that vinyl toy gets hot, warmed up, you know, or something like that, now you've got a separated layer between the acrylic. Little bubbles start to form. And mm-hmm. after time, over years and years and years, that paint will start to flake off. The more you play with it, the more you move the appendages, the paint will flake off around the joints, mm-hmm. you know, because it's not actually bonded to the vinyl. It's just sitting on top of it, you know? So you can take clear coat and you can clear coat the mess out of it and all that stuff, but it's still just sitting on the top. You know, it's not, it hasn't infused with the structure, with the molecular structure of the vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
So when you take those toys, when you buy this, when you've got those toys that are painted with these other types of paint, urethane paints, acrylic paints, hobby paints, you know, you don't want to play with them. You want to stick them behind glass and you want to leave them there so that they can last, right? But the whole point of making toys and collecting toys is to play with them. If you're buying toys to stick them on a shelf and never touch them again.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2.
limited edition custom artist-made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
Why not just collect sculpture? Why not just make sculpture? Why not just make paintings? Why not just collect some of the toys are to be played with?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to play with toys, you need to make sure that, and you want to make it into art, you want it to be this interactive art, then you've got to make it archival. It's got to be something that's going to last, that can be played with and last, and the paint won't flake off. So you take vinyl paint, the solvent-based vinyl paint, and you spray that on. Now what happens is the solvents in the vinyl open up the molecular structure of the PVC,
mm-hmm.
of the plastisol, so that the vinyl plasticizers and stuff in the paint can seep in to those molecules. And then when the solvents evaporate, the vinyl at a molecular level shrinks back down and entraps the paint. So the paint is now embedded in the surface layer of the toy. So the only way you're going to scratch that paint off is if you scratch the toy.
Yeah.
Right. You got to really work at it.
Yeah. The history.
So it's really needed. Incredible. It's really cool. It's a really cool science.
That is cool. Cause I think that I do have one that's done by acrylic. And I get nervous that if anything heats up in my office or anything goes wrong, that there's something that might go wrong with it. But I also
it'll
can't
probably be fine as long as you don't play with it. But yeah. You know, it's like, cause you know, you've probably got AC and stuff like that, and it'd have to get pretty darn hot.
Yeah.
And go hot and cold, you know? So a lot of people, you know, they're like, oh, I don't want to bother with all that. I'm going to use acrylic and stuff. And that's fine. If you'd rather use acrylic, that's fine. But I personally, I like being able to take a toy that's red and painting on it with some colors and leaving some of that red vinyl there. Yeah, you can't do that with acrylic.
Right.
You know, you've got to prime it with some kind of like primer and then coat it, make it all gray or make it all white and get rid of the, what are you going to do if you got a clear toy? What are you going to do if you got a glow in the dark toy? You know, you can't really enjoy painting on those things in the way that they're meant to be painted on, you know?
Yeah. It seems like your career in toys up until this point and now with the show is just learning how to do more things and learning how to do like whatever you don't see around, you just start doing. And so,
yeah, like, that's exactly.
With the paint. Now the factory that's come in, like all these things that you're, it just seems like you look around, you don't see it. So you're like, okay, let's do this. And that's insane. Like that is a cool way to live and a cool way to do art and produce.
Yeah. It's the way everybody should live. It's fun. It's, you know, it's constantly challenging your brain so that it doesn't get all mushy and you gotta stretch new limbs and,
yeah,
and have fun learning and tackling new obstacles and things, and at the same time filling a void that has not been filled yet. You know, like we do have some people in America pulling their own vinyl toys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's awesome. It's cool, but there aren't enough. Right. as many toy makers as we have here in the States. There aren't enough people pulling the vinyl to be able to keep up with the demand. So everyone is kind of forced to work overseas. And now with the tariffs and everything, we're seeing that that's not feasible anymore, at least for the time being.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got to find a way to make it available here. And you know, it's been a long time coming. You know, we need more people. And when I make this factory, you know, I'm not going to try and be the only one. I'm going to try and inspire other people to make these little workshops, because we need, you know, more people just doing this kind of stuff for themselves.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lost art that not enough people know how to do. And once all the people that do know how to do it die, what are you going to do? What are these toy makers over here going to do? And, you know, it's like, we got to know how to do it. We got to figure it out.
I think between that and what I've been waiting for more than anything, because I've worked with Paul at Mile High. I love Paul over there, and and seeing the toys that get pulled. And I think the process still, like, the molds have to be made somewhere else. Once, like, I've been looking for someone that's going to make molds here, and that's it's like an intense process.
We can do it. We can do it. You know, okay. I'm going to do it. I'm going to figure it out. And I've been talking with some people and trying to figure out the process, and Deep Fried Vinyl. I've been talking with him a lot. Really good guy, Thomas. He knows a lot about making your own metal molds, and he's been telling me a lot about it. And I think it's doable, man. I think we can do this. You know, it's just vacuum form. It's just simple copper vacuum forming. Mm-hmm. Not vacuum, electroforming. I don't know why I said vacuum forming. Copper, it's just simple copper electroforming, right? And then you gotta make a stainless steel metal pan, right? To weld that to. You just do some welding. You know, I took welding class in high school. You know, it's not that complicated. Do some stick welding on there, and then you weld some bars, some steel bars for protection. And then you just take some nickel electroless plating and you pour it in there, and you cook it to get that nice polished out inside. You got a mold.
Yeah, you're done.
Why That's is it crazy. Such a big deal? It's not a big deal.
Yeah, I think working with the factories in China and stuff, it's what is crazy is, like, they walk you through the whole process where it's like, oh, we just 3D printed this, and here's this one, and now here's the wax one, and now here's how it's going to work. And it seems so distant and so far away when they do it and just send you pictures.
It does. You know, and that's you know, there's a reason why there is not everything is shown, you know.
Yeah.
Because you know, they don't want, you know, these factories don't want you just kind of copying what they're doing, you know, and everybody's got a little bit of tweak of what they do differently, I think, you know. But everyone's got their own little style of you know, how they're gonna make this into production, you know. But I think that it is something that can be figured out and then shared, because what's the point of gatekeeping? Once I get the process, I'm going to share it. I'm going to show people how I do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to make videos about it. I'm going to show the world how to make a metal mold for soft vinyl toys. I'm going to show the world how to pull your own vinyl. I'm going to show them what temperatures to cook it. I'm going to show them everything.
Well, I'm excited. I can't wait until that comes up, because I like trying new places. I like trying new factories. So Vinyl Wonder Factory, whatever it's called, I'm in.
Yeah, cool.
I mean, you've done this with a lot, and now we've seen that you are moving into video content, which has these puppeteering like a madman. It reminds me of like a Fraggle Rock type thing or something is going on. And so where'd this idea come from, and you wanted to run this like whole TV show esque thing? Tell me about that. Which the first episode is up.
Yes, the first episode is up, and we're working on the second. We were actually filming the second episode last night. We're working, getting the Clarence close ups for the next episode. You know, I loved Pee Wee Herman growing up.
Yeah.
Loved Pee Wee Herman. And I've always been inspired by that wacky weirdness of the being able, like, let's make something and let's have puppets around for it, you know, and everything. Oh man, you know, Zubily Zoo. I don't know if you knew Zubily Zoo. I loved Zubily Zoo. I loved all those kinds of shows, you know, Sesame Street, you know, all that stuff where you're teaching somebody how to do something, but you're having fun with it. And it's kind of in my blood to want to teach, because, like I said, my parents were art teachers. And so I just get this urge sometimes to want to share my knowledge, you know, so that other people can live this kind of fun, whimsical life where you're just making art and expressing yourself and finding business avenues to be able to get it out there and support yourself. You know, it's a really fun way to live when you can do that. And I want to encourage that in everybody I meet. And even if you don't want to do that, sometimes just taking a break and just watching someone else do it is really nice, you know? And I think what pushed me to finally just go for it now and actually make the thing was I got really hooked on watching Craftsman.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know Craftsman.
Yeah, he's cool.
On YouTube.
Cool.
Best YouTube channel ever.
Yeah.
And so I've been supporting Craftsman on Patreon for a while and I just saw like a video of his a long time ago where he was trying to paint on toys by using like a flame torch because he couldn't get the paint to stick. Mm-hmm. And that's why I hit him up and was like, hey man, you know, let me send you some vinyl paint and you can try that, you know. Yeah. Instead of like using a torch, you know. Possibly, you know, like setting your house on fire.
Yeah.
And we just became buddies and did a lot of talking shop and stuff back and forth. He liked the paint and we got to talking about making our own toys and stuff. And we just started inspiring each other to like, you know, let's do this stuff. Let's actually like see if we can find ways to like pull these toys here in the States and stuff. And just getting closer with him and watching his videos get better and better just inspired me to be like, you know what? I want to do this too, but like I can specialize in vinyl toys and that what goes into all that, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's a very niche crowd, you know? That's not everybody wants to learn how to do that. And so I was like, yeah, I'm going to do this. And just finally put the first episode out there. It's, you know, it's going to be, I think it's going to be a slow burn, like anything I do, you know. I'm not like a super hyped up guy or anything, but I think after a few more episodes, it'll hopefully catch on and maybe people will start, you know, watching it and sharing it, hopefully.
Heck yeah. Tell me about, I mean, it, with all these influences of like Pee Wee Herman and Sesame Street and that type of stuff, and it being very specific and headed towards the vinyl toys community and that type of stuff. Is this for teaching? Is this just fun? All the above? What's this looking like for each episode?
Oh, you know, it's just a little bit of everything, you know, like it's just whatever. You know, when I sit down and write up the script,
yeah,
I'm just kind of like, I'm just writing a little bit every night. You know, I'm coming down here around midnight or so, and I'm just writing a little bit, you know, for 30 minutes and then stepping away and then coming back and writing something else. And then, and just like, you know, I just wrote this new poem. I'm going to work this in there and have this little puppet, you know, say this poem at this one point, or, you know, like, oh, you know, like it'd be funny if you know, I've been kind of depressed lately. Let's talk about like, oh, let's throw out a little like, you know, thing about all the stuff that's going on in the world and how it's just awful, you know, like but then let's shut it down, you know, and that'd be kind of funny, you know, and move into making art and stuff. And so I'm just kind of like everything I'm feeling and thinking, I'm just sort of channeling it in there, and then it's just out comes what out comes. So I don't know what each episode is going to be like, you know. There will probably eventually there'll be some sort of recognizable formula that you'll find in it, but I just kind of want it to be fun for anybody to watch, you know, whether you're into making toys or not, you know. Maybe for one person, it'll be a really informative watch. For another person, it might just be like entertainment. For another person, who knows, maybe it'll get them thinking a little deeper about something, you know, that they weren't thinking about before, you know, mentally or whatever. You know, I just want to treat this show as just another way to express myself artistically, you know.
Yeah.
I don't have too much of a plan.
That's awesome. We're coming up to your 10-year mark. It's one of these months. It's this year at some point.
Yes. Yes.
Do you know exactly?
I started it in July.
Okay.
Right around my birthday. And then I think I had my first toy release around August.
Okay. August, so what do we got coming for your big 10 year? What do we have planned?
Yeah. So the 10, so, okay. So, well, I've got a solo show, which is kind of a little retrospective thingy thing, you know, where I'm going to have like a lot of my older work and newer work, just a lot of one-offs of everything I've done,
mm-hmm.
In June at Monster Patrol in LA. Awesome.
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 3.75 inch or 1/18. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now sponsoring Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters. Empire Blisters.
And then, so that'll just be a solo show. And then July, when we actually sat down and started like designing things and coming up with the company, I wanted to have a special little custom show. So I'm having a custom, and I'm going to make it an online show so that whoever missed out on the solo show won't feel like they're missing out, because the very next month we'll have the 10-year anniversary custom show, and we'll have every toy I've ever made.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have one of each custom painted by an artist, some other toy artist. And so I've got 20 something. I can't remember how many toys I've made. I've made a lot of toys and I've got a list. I've got a list somewhere, but everybody's got their blanks for the most part. I think there's a couple of blanks I still need to ship out to a couple of artists. I'm waiting to get them from the factory. But for the most part, I was able to get pretty much everything. And we should have one of everything I've made on the online show. And that'll be around my birthday at the end of July. And then in August, I'm going to Kaiju Go.
Awesome.
And going to be hanging out there with some of my toys and on a panel of with some other artists to do a talk. And then in September, I'm going to be going to Kaijufornia.
Awesome.
In Burbank.
I'll see you there.
Yeah, awesome. And yeah, that was fun last year. I'm excited to come back to Manny's show again this year. And then in October, I'm going to have the 10-year, another 10-year anniversary solo show with Strange Cat in Florida.
Awesome.
And that's everything I've got going on for the rest of the year.
They Strange Cat just moved facilities, right?
I think so.
So yeah. you're gonna fill it up and are you one of the first ones to host something there since they've switched over?
I guess so.
That's awesome.
I guess, I don't know.
That's awesome. Are you doing DesignerCon this year or going or any of that?
You know, I haven't been to DesignerCon in a while. And I've thought about coming back, you know. I wasn't crazy about the space they had before. And you know, it's just a really big convention.
Mm-hmm.
And
you kind of get lost in it.
Yeah, it's a lot. I don't know. I'm not super excited about doing big conventions anymore. I like small things. I like things that are a little more intimate, where you can see everybody who comes in and talk to them all and talk to the artists. They're all there and go out and, you know, have some food with them afterwards. I don't know. It's just, with shows like Designer Con in the past, you know, and like Five Points Fest and bigger shows like that, I find myself, I don't know, just kind of spending all my time trying to like get there and hustle and bustle of like the long days and then like the multiple days thing. And then, you know, like
yeah.
You gotta wind down in the hotel. And I don't know. It's just, I haven't been super inspired to go back, but maybe I'll do next year. Maybe I've never been to Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be fun.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I did. Yeah, it is. I went last year to the first one that was there. It was cool. I mean, it seemed smaller because new venue, all kinds of things, right?
Yeah.
This will be the first year I'm tabling there to see if I like this idea, because I do like the smaller shows as well.
Yeah.
And it's just really pricey to table at Designer Con, and I don't know that
feasible. I'll tell you what, man, it is crazy. You know, the amount of money you got to spend, not yeah. only in flight and hotels and food, but the booth prices and stuff, and then you're competing with all these huge people. I mean, I'm a small fry. Mm-hmm. I'm a small fry, you know. And when I get in there with all those big fish, you know, I can't compete with that. You know, I'm just sitting there. I'm lucky if I make enough to pay for my way,
yeah.
you know, and I don't have time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that. I want to be able to make a little bit of money on a trip like that. I spend a lot of time on a show, you know, when you spend like a month or so, you know,
yeah.
painting toys to get ready for it, saving up, you know, buying the plane tickets and stuff. And then you go out there and you make enough just so that you can say hey to your friends and pay your way. No, man, I can't afford that. I can't do that.
Yeah, I think I told my wife already that like once I go and I do this, all money that I would have spent on getting stuff from other people, it's gone. Like I'm here to table and I'm here to make this viable for Toys on Tap. And so
yeah.
I'm sorry, but that money's gone now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard, you know, the convention scenes is a tough one. And it's traveling and all that stuff has always been kind of hard for me. So,
yeah.
You know, I try to make sure if I'm going to go somewhere, I don't want it to be high stress. I want it to be low stress. And yeah. I don't want to worry about, I want to make it more of a, if it does end up being one of those things where I just made just barely enough to pay for my way to go, I want to feel good about that and think of it as more of a vacation than like a work trip. And when you go to these big conventions like DesignerCon and stuff like that, it's never a vacation. It's a freaking work trip. You know,
right.
It's a grind.
Yeah. And you're talking, I mean, I'm a hyper extrovert, but even I'm tired after going to Designer Con for a day.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
now doing 3 days of it, and it's going to be, I think the weirder part is like, I have no interest in going out and partying at night.
Yeah.
I have no interest in like, I'm a very routine oriented person. So it's like, once I'm done at the convention, I'm in the hotel and I'm reading or I'm like doing business stuff and then waking up early, going to the gym and then going to the, I'm a very detailed person. So it's like, I don't think this is going to be suited for me.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. And you got to watch out for those big conventions, man, because the con crud at those conventions yeah. are something else off the charts, man. Like you get sick with a little something that you pick up at a small, you know, show with, you know, 10 other artists, you know, you could probably knock it out. You probably kick it in like less than a week or something. But man, all the worst sicknesses I've ever gotten came from vending at big conventions.
Like, don't tell me that.
It's just the worst, man. You got to like, nobody wears a mask and everybody is coughing and they're all paid to go. So they're all going to go whether they're sick or not. You know, all these vendors who like spent so much on plane tickets to get out there and all this stuff. So they're going whether they're sick or not, and you're going to catch it if you have to meet them or hang out with them or they come over and touch your stuff. I don't know. It's just too many people. It's too many people. I get weird. I live out in the country and I like my space
yeah.
and I'm kind of a hermit. And so big conventions kind of scare me, and so I don't know when I'll go to another big one. It'll take somebody really pulling me out of my bubble to get me to go.
I mean, yeah. And then once the factory's open, maybe that's what'll pull you back in to go promote factory stuff.
Maybe, but something tells me that I'm probably not going to have to promote too much, because I'm only going to be able to do so much. You know, it's going to be small. You know, we're not going to be like a Bandai over here. You know, like, it's going to be a small little shop. It's going to be very similar to what the Japanese got going on, you know, where, you know, you can pull, we're going to be pulling one, you know, a couple toys at a time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I'm only going to be able to keep up with, I'm probably not going to be able to just like make everybody's toys. You know, I just won't have time. Everybody be waiting years for their toys, you know, like I've already gotten a lot of people reaching out to me, you know, when they first heard that, and they're like, oh, make sure you put me on your list of people, you know? And I'm like, all right. You know, I've already got a list of people that, like, I got to figure out how to just pull my own toys first, you know? And then I want to, that's my priority, is I just want to be able to make my own stuff. And then once I've got that handled, you know, then I'll make this person and this person and this friend. I got a few friends here that have been, you know, looking forward to it. But I don't know if I'm going to go out there trying to get everybody and their brother, you know, in my shop, because
you'll have to expand.
I don't want to make a stressful situation for myself or my employees.
Yeah. Holy moly. Thank you. I have to just say, like, thank you for coming on and talking about history and your toys and all that stuff.
My pleasure.
The last part is all about the artist and promoting anything you got coming up, any toys or any of that stuff that you want to talk about. And so, yeah, we leave that part. And so if there's anything you got coming up that you want people to know about, if you want to connect with people, if you want to find people that want to collect, all that stuff, this is that time.
Well, let's see. Thank you. Thank you for that opportunity. Let's see. I feel like I've talked about a lot. Oh, well, you know, I just started a Patreon.
Okay.
So, you know, that's right there. That's what I'm trying to really promote right now, because that's going to help me, you know, set aside time to make this show and make it good.
You know,
when people can become patrons on there and subscribe, you know, for a monthly fee, it's nice to be able to have some of that income so that I could take a break from doing my other things and focus just on making a really good video for everybody.
Yeah.
So you can find me on Patreon at Wonder Goblin. I got a new toy coming out soon. Clarence.
Awesome.
Is Clarence the toy will happen. He was bugging me about it in the last episode, so I'm going to make it happen. So we've got that coming soon. And what else? I don't know. I feel like I told you a lot for the thing. Like, everybody knows plenty about me. They're probably ready to wrap it up.
heck yeah. Hey, thank you again for coming on Toys on Tap.
Yeah, my pleasure.